Welcome back to the Famous Monsters Podcast. Your blood-curdling screams asking for our return has reached us, and we're back to give you highlights and thoughts on all things horror, sci-fi, and fantasy. From television to film to comics to collectibles, nothing is off-limits. I'm your host, George Morrow, the jack of all trades. And with us, we have our fearless leader, publisher, and producer of the Famous Monsters of Film and Magazine, and the conventions. We also have our social media guru here, our media manager and coordinator,
Cheese Hensley.
Cheese.
I like it. It's with an accent. You say cheese.
I like it.
Cheese Hensley.
No, I like cheese better.
Right.
Because you're cheesy.
Yeah, you give a lot of cheese.
Yeah. Now, I said something very important, and that's our conventions. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves conventions. Everyone goes to them. They're popping up everywhere. And more importantly, the home of it was always Famous Monsters, and we brought it back thanks to this man over here. You want to talk to us about it? Tell us what were your thoughts on bringing it back to the people?
Yeah. You know, if people really kind of studied what Famous Monsters was about, the magazine, which tends to be kind of the centerpiece of all of what we do, or at least certainly that's what people remember Famous Monsters for. Really, if you think about what Forey did, Famous Monsters magazine was more of a, like an outgrowth of the community and fandom that he was creating. I mean, for goodness sakes, the man was, the first cosplayer. I will explain that to those who don't know what that is or what the history is, but he was the first cosplayer, official cosplayer that and historical records. He was doing small fan conventions in the sci-fi world, gosh, since the 20s. I think a lot of times, and maybe I just kind of speak for myself and the few people that I know, but
our few minions.
Yeah, a few minions. You know, people kind of think like San Diego Comic-Con just happened 10 years ago and 15 years ago, and that, you know, the fandom was already just kind of like made ready, add water. And it really wasn't. You know, it's the convention started out with, you know, four guys in a room just talking about the stuff that they love. And then, you know, they started having meetings and found out that other people around the world or around the country or their community or their city loved the same things. And so it was kind of a meeting of like-minded people that kind of grew into a much larger, when you get more than 100 people in a room, you got to just start figuring out how to deal with the logistics. And so that's really kind of the birth of the formal conventions, is from what I understand. Yeah. So, Forey was right there when, not only was he there when the conventions were being produced, he was the one, you know, figuring out what this looked like.
From my understanding, he kind of used his own fandom and his own, because he curated his own house, his almost like a living museum, and kind of used that almost as a precipice for it in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we live in an age where everything is so highly produced, right? You don't know what's organic or what's real. You watch reality television; it's hardly reality. You know, there's a lot of ringers and it's staged stuff.
Yeah,
but back in Forey's day, everything kind of happened organically. So, for instance, Forey just saw an immense value in props. You know, he would watch these movies. He lived in L.A. He grew up in L.A. His grandfather was the architect that designed the Bradley Building, the iconic one that you see in like Blade Runner and every other movie. Huh. So, you know, so he's a true, L.A. native. He saw the birth of Hollywood. So he felt that, you know, these amazing, what he called imagine movies, he saw these amazing imagination movies being produced. And then, you know, it was done out of paper mache or whatever hardware stores had and fabric stores had. And they would just toss them. I mean, in this day and age, you just wouldn't think of that because it's, you know, it's wealth.
Yeah, it's $500,000 is used to make a mask. And it's right. Like, and we got to make 10 of these masks.
Right, right,
we're
right,
not
right.
Getting rid of these.
Exactly. So you know, he just started collecting these things. And at the end, you know, it's kind of silly to collect things that you feel valuable, that you love, when you can't share it with people. So, having inherited an enormous amount of, I actually don't know how much he inherited, but a lot more than what the average person had. His dad was an oil man. So they ended up, he ended up having a house, a giant mansion actually up in the Hollywood Hills in the earlier days. And so he just started populating that, you know, that home with props that, you know, he all those guys back in the 50s would wear like Rod Serling type of clothing, you know, so
yeah.
White shirts, thin, skinny black ties. You know, they all look like G-men. And he would, you know, dumpster dive in these suits in behind Universal or RKO or whatever the studio that was doing the B sci-fi horror stuff was. So, so he populated his home with this and then started inviting people. And it just became a tour. And he continued this through multiple renditions of his you know, different homes. So yeah, long explanation to a very short question.
To the birth of what we have today, which is now our Famous Monsters Convention, which we just relaunched this past month. What was it like? Actually, I want to switch it over to Chase, because you've been in conventions for a long time.
Yes.
I've been a long time con goer. But you're still very fresh to this experience. This was like your second, third convention or so?
Third?
Right?
Yeah, we have a word for people who never have done anything before but is new to it, but it's a family show. So Chase. we just say it's the Chase.
Yeah. It's the Chase experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
So cheers.
Cheese.
What has it been like for you entering the convention world as not just as an employee, someone who helps build it, but even just as a goer and enjoying the show?
Kind of mixed review on it. Like, I've always heard of Comic-Con and stuff like that, and I've always been like, oh, that looks like really awesome to go to. And then when I went to my first Comic-Con, I was like all excited, hyped up, like, all right, this is going to be great. And I went there and I was like, it's pretty cool. It's good. I like it. It wasn't quite what I was thinking, but it was really fun to go to and good experience. And then that carrying over into like what we are doing with our conventions, it's like that's a good point for me to look at. It's like I had this vision of what I thought conventions should be. And then it's like when we talk about what we want to do in our Famous Monsters conventions, it's like, this is what I want. I want this to happen, because these are things that I expected, things that I thought were going to be really prevalent, which for the most part, most things I was expecting were there, but it just wasn't as magical as I was hoping.
It wasn't Disney World.
Yeah, it wasn't Disney. And I was like, oh, why?
Can I jump in? I mean, I have a question. I mean, so basically what you're saying is that even as big and as hyped up as San Diego Comic-Con is, which, you know, I love the STCC, Comic-Con International San Diego is the official, they've been that for a long time. But so what I'm understanding is that you hope there to have been more in a convention, and you're kind of excited that when we're operating these FM conventions, that we're able to actually deliver what your hopes were.
Yeah. And it's fun to be part of the planning for that and part of the conversation, and then being like, well, I know I would like this, and then hearing other people, I would like that. And it's like, we have a chance to bring together a whole bunch of things that a bunch of different people like that can help push towards what I had imagined in the first place, being someone that hadn't ever gone to it. So I didn't really know exactly what to expect. I just had this kind of like, oh, it's going to be like this. And so it met most of the expectations. It just wasn't as perfect as I was hoping. So it's good and fun to be part of the process and the progression of building towards what I would consider that, and hopefully what everyone else would consider that.
So George, like, mm-hmm. you're a pretty experienced con goer. You would be what we would consider,
I'm a vet.
Yeah, opposite of, I don't want to use the words of what you might be described in your experience as a con goer, so, because it's a family show.
Yeah.
but you're an experience. You're opposite to cheese.
Opposite to cheese.
As an experience. So, you know, what are your thoughts as far as, you know, I know that you participated in San Diego Comic-Con for a while, and you then ended up, you know, joining our team as a team member, as a vendor, as a participant of panels, and then you know, now doing these Famous Monsters conventions. What are your thoughts?
I've always loved going to conventions. I gotta say, like many people call them the glorified flea markets. I grew up on flea markets. As a comic book collector, a collector of anything, that's where you find your gold.
True.
You know, true. And then at a convention, you're not just finding your little trinkets and treasures, but you're also getting to meet people who are into industry. Being a comic book lover, I'm meeting people like Jim Steranko and Neil Adams, and they're telling me the stories of old
Phil Kim.
You know,
it's great.
Tell me everything about the monsters and the goriness. But that was always interesting for me, going to FM, is that with the other stuff, it was always just comics, you know, and movies. And that's nice, but like, it wasn't always the things that, like, I grew up also on my sci-fi and monsters. Like, my parents were not shy to show me at 5 years old a horror movie. And with our shows, I'm able to now meet people like Sarah Karloff, and I'm getting to hear the old stories of like her dad going in the makeup and the troubles of having to wear that stuff for like 8 hours in a day, you know, whatever, how many hours. It's just ridiculous. And like, I'm an old soul. I want to hear those things. I want to know about the workings of these films, because without them, I wouldn't have the stuff I watch today.
True.
You know, true. It's like, without them, they would have inspired the greats like, you know, Spielberg or, you know,
pretty much
Ridley,
everybody,
anyone yeah. that's from
any,
our era.
Any film worth watching, the director, writer, actor, the creators of that film, you know, basically grew up on FM.
Yeah.
You know, there's
Monster Kids.
Absolutely. I mean, there's not to tread over, you know, information that our fans know like the back of their hand. But, you know, for those who are just kind of tuning in, the casual monster fan or horror or science fiction movie fan, it's I mean, it's interesting that I just drew a blank. Edit that part out.
It's so breathtaking what we're doing that you can lose thought in what it is. No, it's so true.
Well, it's true. I was thinking, what happened in when I glitched right now was, as I was talking, I was like, yeah, Sarah Karloff, man, she was pretty amazing. And I was like, the lines at Rico Browning's autograph table was longer than like
it's breathtaking.
I'm like, wow, you know, people are. And so I'm sorry, I glitched there a bit, because as I was drifting into thought, I just kind of recollected back onto Dallas. So
yeah, it's a magical thing when you can combine someone from an era who helped build upon everything in what was Hollywood land, and now it is our Hollywood, and just that whole groundbreaking time, you know. And it's still happening. They're still having an effect. The fact that someone, I'm 34, there are people there who are in their 20s and their teenagers who are lining up for these guys who are, you know, the original monsters that we watch in black and white, and they're still popular. People still want to know what they did.
Yeah, you know, getting older, not too much older, but getting older, you kind of see these cycles. When I thought about Bela Lugosi and growing up, you know, they were kind of mythical and legendary, right? But then I grew up during Christopher Lee and the Hammer film. I mean, they were still a little bit before my time, but these actors are still actively
very, very relevant.
Yeah, very relevant. Yeah. And watching, you know, and I didn't know this, but when I started watching Hammer films, I was like 9 or 10, and it was just these amazingly buxom women with heavy English accents. I'm like, oh wow, this is what it must have been like, you know, back in the Gilded Age of the 1800s. And so, you know, there was a lot of sexiness to it. There was a lot of, you know, it was a horror film. It was Dracula. Or, you know, Frankenstein or whatnot.
There was a romantic allure about those films.
Absolutely, which is kind of weird. Like, I don't even know if that's, like, we should be doing that in our society. Because it's like, you know, this is a soulless killer. You got sexy women. And then you're like, it's kind of romantic. It's like, you know, I don't know how to reconcile that. But the point I was going to make is that these are not mythical people anymore. And now that, like Robert Englund, you know, I was in high school when Nightmare on Elm Street came out. Friday the 13th came out a little earlier than that, but Nightmare on Elm Street, but then I mean, they were all movies that were like, kind of like cheese movies, you know, they were date movies where people, where kids went and snuck into the drive-in or whatever. And they saw these. At the time, I was like, "Oh wow, it's terribly graphic and gory, and it's certainly not for everybody's liking." And now, you know, when I meet Robert Englund years later, he's a great guy. He's funny, but these people are now starting to become legendary to the last generation, like how Christopher Lee was to me, or is to me, and And Christopher Lee now is to this next generation like what Bela Lugosi was to me. It's so like how, you know, address that a little bit. I mean, have you experienced kind of being in the middle of growing into this and watching the next generation?
I think I'm definitely going through what you just talked about, because yeah. I'm from the era where like I grew up watching Nightmare on Elm Street and like Hellraiser and Friday the 13th. That was my, I guess, classic horror that I grew up with. You know, and now I'm at a place where like we have the kids like, oh man, did you watch Get Out, which is an amazing film, you know, but now that's their new thing, you know, that or the one where the blind guy who uses his ears to be able to sense the children in the house. I can't remember the name of it, unfortunately.
It's like Don't Speak or
but
something.
Don't, yeah, it's like Don't Speak, exactly. You know, and these are the new ones. And it's like, they're really good, but it's like, man, it's not like back in my day, you know, when you had real monsters like Freddy Krueger. Yeah. I become like an old fuddy-duddy. And I was like, they knew how to scare you. They went in your dreams. Yeah. You can't escape that.
Well, I think the testament to that is I come from a more ignorant, superstitious generation. And these kids, they want facts. They want, you know, they're like, oh, they're not. You know, that's why I kind of like
Google says you can't do that.
Right. Well, not only that, I think, you know, creatures coming out of the ocean, like, oh, we have sonars and we have like nuclear, you know, bunker busters. I mean, it's like, we'll just take care of them. I mean, kids are not afraid of things that we used to be afraid of, because, you know, it's always about the unknown. Well, what's scary now is, you know, we know that we live in a dangerous world with, you know, probably way too much prescription psychotropics out there. We've met a few of those people. And you know, if they get on the wrong side of the day, then it could be bad for everybody who's not there, you know, or who's not a part of that trip. So, you know, I you can kind of see the concerns of the era or the generation. So the reason I love what we do is it's really like sign of the times. You know, when the last time a zombie apocalypse movie was big was when the Vietnam War was starting to happen, and George Romero was putting out Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead. I mean, these were times where, you know, we thought, oh, the Russians are gonna, you know, blow us up, and we're gonna have a zero sum war.
A nuke could drop at any moment.
Yeah, exactly. Tuck and roll, or tuck and cover, or whatever.
Get like, under your desk.
Tuck somewhere.
It's not gonna help.
Pray. Yeah. But the point is that, you know, we saw a lot of that sort of thing happening. And then, you know, we had, you know, I mean, taking all politics aside, you know, you just have had a very long period of American prosperity where we had very little issues globally. Everybody loved us. And then now we're, you know, with the Walking Dead being so popular, you can kind of see how the concerns of... So, you know, these films are truly art. They're truly a manifestation of social consciousness. And so sometimes when you put out a movie that is kind of out of the times, it doesn't really succeed, or it takes time for it to become a cult classic, yeah. Like Blade Runner, for instance. I read an article, Issa Hackett, Issa Dick Hackett, who is the daughter of Philip K. Dick. You know, she talks about how she, when Blade Runner first came out, nobody was in the theater. She went there and she walked out of the, in tears. Her father had just passed on. Like, it was not a commercial success, but then 4 years, 5 years later, it became a massive cult following. Yeah.
It showed the power of the VHS.
Yeah, that's true too. But just even the story, it's like sometimes stories are told out of its element in time. And, you know, being, you know, Philip K. Dick was such a prescient writer, you know, I mean, we've been there before where we thought, oh, this is a really great idea. No one's done this before. And people are like, yeah, we don't care. 4 years later, 5 years later, oh, they do care. Yeah. Well, we've already forgotten about, you know, all the pain of making the movie and the pain of trying to find a distributor and the pain of not getting paid and the pain of, you know, and you're like, I'm done with this thing, and you're moving on. And the people are like, oh, that's a really good piece of work you did. And you're like, oh yeah, I've moved on to the next. Yeah. But the point is that, like, you know, it's interesting that that it is like a consciousness of the current affairs, basically.
Chase.
Yes.
You have spoken in the office many times about how you wish you can just watch horror movies all day. And yeah. Your life would be complete.
It would be good. Very good.
So I'm curious, What is your take on all this? Like, where did it start for you?
I don't know exactly where. I just remember when I was really young, back when the mythical Blockbuster and other movie rental stores were still a thing.
What were they? What?
What? Blockbuster?
What was a? Is this bomb? A Blockbuster? What? What's...
It's.
So back in our day, kids, there used to be stores where you go and pick up a movie, and you'd exchange money for this movie, and you had to bring it back within a few days. If you didn't, then you got charged. Sounds very weird.
Was this before or after electricity?
Oh, you had a crank.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah.
You produced the electricity. But I remember every time we'd go there, there were two things I would go for. I would go looking at the video games. But normally before that, I would go up these flight of stairs, and there was right in the middle, and then to the left, it's like maybe 5 or 6, maybe 7 rows of horror movies.
And Chase was told by his mother, don't go up there.
And I was like, too late. I'm up here, Mom. And I come running down. Okay, I'm down, and I've got these 4 movies. Let's go watch these. But ever since I was young, I loved watching the horror movies. There were things like, I didn't start off with like classics, you know, like the older kind of movies, like a lot of like our fans have. So I never got around to those until I started getting older. And it's just now kind of like, oh, because when I was a kid, I didn't have the patience for like the black and white kind of stuff. And I had all this stuff right in front of me anyway. So I started watching that stuff. But now that I'm older, I'm like, oh, I can look back at those older classic movies and enjoy them and appreciate them. But at the time, there were things like Nightmare on Elm Street movies, Friday the 13th movies. There was Troll.
Troll. What a magical film.
It was amazing. I had nightmares about that one when I was a kid.
I got a little story about Troll, as you guys know. It's a precursor to Harry Potter, right?
Oh, yeah. We talked about it.
Go ahead.
Harry Potter Jr. But
his name was... The magician there was named Harry Potter.
I think it was, wasn't it the kid?
Yeah,
the kid's name.
Yeah, his name. He was Harry Potter Jr.
Yeah. And he looked just like Harry Potter.
Yeah. See? Movies like that and like Dolls... Like doll movies, those were always super creepy to me. I was like, dolls are creepy on their own, and now there's like these dolls coming alive trying to kill people. I love it. It's terrifying. I don't know why. I just, maybe it's just kind of like the excitement and the adrenaline, and then like how it still affects you like later on afterwards. Like if I watch like a comedy, like I'll laugh about it while I'm watching a movie, and then once in a while I'll kind of look back and like, huh, that was funny, you know. But like when I watch like a horror movie, it's one of those things like, especially when you find something that's like more creepy or scary to you, which is easier when you're a child, which is probably where it all started. It's like later on, like there's like a week of you being like, oh my gosh, is that troll thing outside my window? What's happening? And so it's like something that stays with you, and it's that excitement, and it's just always there. So I basically, from that, and then as I was growing up, Halloween is my favorite holiday. Fall is my favorite season. Just everything about it, like the smells, the colors, all the horror that's encompassed with it, just everything about Halloween and fall just ties back into that original passion I had for the horror movies. And so it's very nostalgic for me. I just love the feeling of it when I'm around it. And I'm always just out trying to find like, okay, these movies don't really scare me so much. Some of them, like they do the jump scare kind of things, but I'm looking for a movie that's really going to like frighten me. And so I'm willing to watch every single horror movie that I come across. Like, is this the one? Is this going to do it? And it's kind of like a quest / love.
Yeah, for that winning lottery ticket.
I'm waiting for it.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, it's interesting, right? Like you watch a 19, I don't know. You how do I say it? You watch like a 1950s movie, let's say American Graffiti. You're like, wow, you know, and it starts and ends in 1950, whatever America, you know, rock and roll was just blowing up. Elvis was on this. And I don't know if it's like this for you, but I used to walk away going, that literally was a universe that existed forever somewhere in time. And like, how do I get back to that? But then what you realize is, you know, Elvis got fat and he got, you know, he died. And, you know, something else came about. Like there's this transition. It's like that for me in like horror films or fall. You know, whenever I think about Halloween, it's like this, like you said, it's a completely magical time. Like all of a sudden, you know, you're wearing tank tops, you're out by the ocean, and then just that last day of, it's never exactly calendar thing because we live in California, so it doesn't quite matter. But there is that moment where it's cold and it changes, and all of a sudden it's fall. The leaves are falling and they're beautiful colors, and then they go away. It's almost like you're in that space forever. Every season you go back and you're in that space forever. And the way your mind compartmentalizes these universes as if it's a continuous time. And that's why I think like Tim Burton is like brilliant, because A Nightmare Before Christmas, it's Halloween all year. Yeah. So yeah, that's how it is for me. Like and now that I have kids, it's fantastic when these holidays come about, because now I get to see it through somebody that looks kind of like me, you know?
So. It's like opening up a time capsule.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
I'd say that's all we have time for this week.
Okay. Yeah,
it was nice having everyone back. Unfortunately, we'll have to come back next week. But next week we'll be talking about...
Why is it unfortunate?
Well, because I could talk about stuff all the time.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Stop. Oh, it's unfortunate that it's one.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. We should also thank, you know, everybody in the office. You know, Dominique, Eleni, Karen, Natalie, Jen Pham, and our engineer, what's his name?
Phil Spahn.
We gotta get you a name tag.
Gabriel Kim, and Miles Kim, and of course the lady who pays you guys all, my wife Kimberly Kim.
Most important. We can do without everyone else. As long as we have her, we're okay.
So we want to just thank everybody in the office, and oh, Holly, of course.
I was about to say,
Holly,
don't
who's
care.
Not in the office.
Yeah.
But who is our?
Who will be a season regular?
Season regular, and she's our executive editor of all things. So
magician of words,
absolutely. And Jomo, shout out to Jomo, yeah. our resident foyer. We will see you next week.
Yeah, same scary time, same scary place.